I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Chris Foreman. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Look, I know you're doing a million of these interviews and I'm just some Australian geezer having it on, but thank you for spending some time with us.
Hey, no trouble. No worries.
You're coming for the V Festival. You haven't played Australia since I fell through the floor at your gig at the Capitol Theatre in 1980.
Oh, was that you, was it?
I was dancing up the back and I saw the entire front of the stage go into the orchestra pit, and that was some friends of mine, and you had to stop the concert for a while. And it takes a bit to stop a madness concert.
Yeah, it does.
You can hardly wait to taste our lovely sunshine on your lips again, can you? While we're here, we might as well edit your Wikipedia entry, see if there's any mistakes, Chris.
Oh, yeah, go on then.
Apparently, you put a webcam on the neck of your guitar and broadcast these videos. Is this correct, Chris?
That is correct.
Now, is this some retrospective way of finding out if you've had the correct fret fingering?
Yeah, sometimes you can see my fat little fingers on there. I mean, I started doing it using a mobile phone, you know?
You're doing it live sometimes?
No, I can't really do it live. I mean, I film bits of a song. And then, I run off and get the tour manager and I put it on YouTube.
Just yet another way of madness connecting with their audience, because you guys are all about the audience, that's for sure.
The fans like it, yeah.
You're living on the south coast of England now. You're out of Kentish Town, is that correct?
Yeah, got tired of the old place.
A drug deal gone bad, had to move out of the neighbourhood, or the neighbours just had enough? What happened?
Bit of both.
You moved
down to the lovely south coast. Probably just like where you are, you know.
Oh, look, you'd exhausted all your credit in the Kentish area. How did boys from Kentish and Camden Town come in contact with ska music and get involved in a ska band? How did that happen?
It's just, stuff we heard as kids growing up, you know. In England, you know, it's quite popular, reggae and sort of ska and things. You know, Desmond Dekker. Get up in the morning, stay babe, or red, sir, so that every mouth can be paid. Prince Buster. Yeah, they were all around when we were kids. Madness. Madness. We call it madness.
Madness. Madness. We call it madness. Chris, being part of madness, you get people like me, geezers on the phone, going, you are part of making music that was like some of their happiest times in their childhood. Is that a bit of a double-edged sword sometimes? Because people think that they really know you when they don't know you at all.
We've got that sort of persona of being a bit nutty all the time, and then we're not really.
Well, yeah, particularly like if you're going in for a bank loan or something, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm not you. You jump in the swimming pool. Hey, you! What sort of groupies do madness get? Because I was thinking, Spandau Ballet, Spandau Ballet, Duran Duran, they get the martini sipping supermodels. You guys would get the cider drinking party girls, I imagine.
Exactly, with carrier bags. You met a lot of lovely ladies, you know, as friends, as it were.
A bit less poserish.
Yeah.
But could you take Spandau Ballet in a fight?
Oh, no way.
Oh, their cardigans are pretty tough. You were on Top of the Pops back in the day. Who was your sworn enemy that you'd sort of eye off from the other side of the dressing room, green room?
Honestly, there's no one really. We were all in it together. But I think the Jam always used to get us, because they would always put a record out at the same time as us, and pip us to number one. So it's that kind of rivalry, but it's no one really, no, there's no one really.
And Paul Weller, a bit pretentious sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I always found him okay.
And also it was that mods in the scars thing too.
Slightly. I mean, we kind of really moved away from it, really. Do you know what I mean? We've become more of a kind of pop band, I suppose, really.
And I want to mention the new album, The Liberty of Norton Folgate, which sounds like some sort of coming-of-age, out-of-the-closet story, but nothing of the sort. Would you like to explain your new album?
It's taken a long time to finally get to you, maybe 2 years, not of constant work. I'd left the band a few years ago. I got sick of it. And I thought, they're really doing some good songs here. This is a couple of years ago. Yeah, and I got back and we started doing, and then we stopped. And then we eventually got all these songs together. And, we had sort of 22 songs. The main one, The Liberty of Norton Folgate, is this song Suggs wrote and Carl and Mike, which is a kind of bit of a history of London. Very good song. Purposefully walking nowhere. Oh, I'm happy just floating about on the
Sunday afternoon. The stallholders all call and shout
to no one in particular,
avoiding people you know. You're just basking in your own company. The Technicolor world's going by, but you're the lead in your own movie.
I hope that we perform it in Australia, but some of them might be a bit scared because it's so long.
10 minute, 10 second track.
Yeah, and it has its moments.
Almost a bit more like Down the Concept Album track for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck said it's all about London. And I said, well, what have all our songs been about? I mean, they're always about London anyway. You know, we never said, you know, I was cruising down LA type band, were we? They, you know, a lot of them fit together and they're written by different combinations of the band, which is always good. You know, it's not just one person. Cool, I've even written a couple. It's really good. I think it's one of the best things we've ever done. You know, and you know when people go, this is their Sgt. Pepper's. It isn't our Sgt. Pepper's, it's our White Album. You know, the Beatles' White Album. I think it's like that because the songs on that are really good and they really vary.
With the Madness repertoire, you know radio likes to play the same songs all again. So with Madness, for you guys, they probably play It Must Be Love, Driving in My Car, House of Fun, and I think those would be the major radio ones now. Is there what is the song that you like that you guys had as a hit that you never hear on the radio?
The first single, I think, The Prince. I just always like it. I like playing it. You know, there's something about it. Just such a nice little simple song.
Didn't sound like anything at the time either.
No, it was a bit original, yeah.
An earthquake is erupting, but not in Orange Street. A ghost dance is preparing. You got to help us with your feet. If you're not in a mood to dance, step back, grab yourself a seat. This may not be uptown Jamaica, but we promise you a treat. Bust the foamy over with your bogus stance. Shuffle me off my feet. Even if I kept on running, I'd never get to Orange Street.
Are you guys heavily influenced by Ian Drew? Would that be a fair call or not?
That'd be a fair call.
I only met the great man once, drinking in a student loft in Edinburgh one night, and I found him a glass, and Ian was very happy for that.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. I only met him the once, and he was a very nice man, a sad passing.
There have been some clever bastards.
Lucky beaters, lucky beaters.
There have been some clever bastards.
So what is the Madness song that we could whack on that you go, hey, that's one I haven't heard? Apart from The Prince, which I think is a great one, and your first one, on the great Stiff label too, which had a lot of respect.
Well, there's a song called Drip Fed Fred, which was on the Wonderful album.
Oh, now that was overlooked by radio a lot. Do you think that was just because people couldn't get their head around Madness back suddenly?
It's a bit of a hard lyric, a hard sentence to say, isn't it? Drip Fed, it's a bit of a tongue twister.
It's all about organised crime in the East London area, perhaps?
Sort of, yeah. It could be about Mr Thompson's father. You know, Lee wrote it, and he got, you know, Ian Drew to sing on it. He was writing the song. He was in Holland. Mike Barson, the keyboard player, was living in Holland, and Lee went to see him, and he saw Ian Drew in the hotel, and he said, we've just done this song. Can you sing on it? So there you are.
Gee, and that would have been one of the last things Ian did, wouldn't it?
He did the album Mr Love Pants. Good album.
We want Freddy for our leader. Freddy is a man.
What's the first thing you're going to do when you get in Australia here, apart from hide from the federal police?
Get me little trunks on and get down Bondi Beach, mate.
Where you'll meet all the other English backpackers.
Yeah.
It'll be just like Kentish Town again.
The first time we came to Australia, yeah, we were there at 7 a.m. eating fish and chips.
7 a.m. fish and chips and Molly Meldrum. No one should do that to a band.
Molly Meldrum. Yeah, I love old Molly. He's still around then.
He's still around. You'll find him and his liver waiting in customs for you when you come through.
No, he's a character. I like
it. House of Fun. Is there any truth to the rumour that House of Fun was originally written without a chorus and you had to stick one in and edit it on?
Absolutely true.
Because the song's going, dinka, 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 and then, welcome to the House of Fun, here we come, and then, dinka, dinka. Excuse me, gentlemen, no chorus.
I can't remember that we thought we'd go and write one, but I remember we were in a studio, and this is really true. I said, oh, I've got this little tune, this little bit of music, which was the chorus, you know, jing, jing, jing. And I actually, funny enough, I think I went down to the corner for some fish and chips. And I came, and, you know, because we'd recorded this little bit of music, and I came back, and Suggs had written, you know, welcome to the house, and we did it. And they, back in those days, you know, they physically cut the tape and sort of spliced it in. And if you listen very carefully, it sort of goes, oh.
Welcome to the house of fun. Welcome to the house, son. You can just see where the razor blade's gone across the tape at a 45-degree angle.
Exactly.
And the other madness myth which I want to put to bed or grow with a bit of water now is, were you taking the piss with Return to the Lost Palmas 7 just to prove that at that stage you could have anything on the English charts? Man, it's a very unusual...
I know exactly what you're saying, you know, how could you get that to number 7? But we were so popular. Dave Robinson said, you've got to do another... He was mad on us doing instrumentals. He thought they were the things. Because he's right, because you can put an instrumental out in, you know, France, Germany and... They don't have to worry about the lyrics, do they?
Although you did do an Italian version of One Step Beyond.
Well, kind of. That was because this other guy, he did a cover of our one.
And the recording of the voices in the background, is that actually you guys down the boozer in Los Palmas 7?
Yeah. Well, I think we were in the studio.
Let's have it. I'd like you and me, Tommy McGuire and his combo.
Yeah, well, I could see you guys, you being a bit of a scone and tea and round the corner for fish and chips rather than, like, drop some acid and do some coke with Duran Duran, although that is most of their work. And look, I don't know about you, Chris, but I was totally shocked when I discovered that Kate Moss was doing cocaine in a recording studio, because as far as I know, no model in the history of pop music has ever done that with a band. I was shocked. I was straight on the phone to the ABC and the BBC to complain.
Oh, good for you.
Good night.
We need some scandal to finish off with. Is there any scandal you can bring us up with, Chris Foreman? Something about the new album? Have you been in a fight with someone?
We're so unscandalous these days.
You can make stuff up.
You have to make something up.
With your decade or more of music videos you made, you have interesting music videos where you guys are the focal funny point, and not one single of your videos is even remotely sexist. You never had a girl in a booby bikini sitting on a car for no apparent reason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was no bootylicious in your clips.
Well, I was going to say, you know, whenever we needed a woman, we just got Lee to dress up, you know.
Like Monty Python.
Our house, straight away, you know, he had the old tights on straight away. Yeah, you know, he was a sort of mother. House of Fun, where three of them were dressed as old grannies. We did have a girl in, we did a video called The Sweetest Girl, and we had a girl in, but it's always a bit uncomfortable, that sort of thing. Sweetest girl. Eyes are for you, oh honey, the sweetest girl in all the world. These eyes are for you, oh honey.
Which is a Skritti Plitty cover, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sweetest girl.
Back then, you know, everybody had to make a 12-inch, didn't they?
Yeah.
And it wasn't always boom-chi, boom-chi, boom-chi dance stuff. You just extend the thing out to 6 minutes by doing wacky stuff.
Yeah, I think we did. I mean, we were never that keen on it, on doing those things. We'd usually just rather stick another track on that was unavailable, you know. But, yeah, we did do a few of those. I mean, I can't really remember what they sounded like, to tell the truth.
You're still open with One Step Beyond?
Yes, there was a move to change that, but it didn't go down too well with some people.
Yeah, well, I think the idea of doing Stairway to Heaven is really not your bag.
Well, that's what this blooming Liberty and Norton Folgate's made, Stairway to Heaven.
And you guys actually got involved, they were going to put a high-rise up there, and with your interest in the area there, did it go ahead? What happened?
Suggs was, he's very into London, you know, and he does this program, TV program called Disappearing London. You know, he goes around places, and he went there and he found out about it and he wrote the song. And there is some kind of local campaign to save it from being developed. But there is some sort of local law that says it can't be developed, I think. So we're sort of helping with that.
Madness local community workers.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Brighton, so I'm not bothered if they knock the bloody place down, you know?
That means you're a neighbour of Leo Sayer.
You make me feel like dancing. I want to dance the night away.
Leo, oh, God, why did you have to say Leo Sayer, does he live here?
I think he does.
I'm moving. Oh, Fatboy Slim lives up the road.
Check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother.
You must look back upon your career as going, wow, sometimes how did I get here? Like, one minute I was goofing off Kentish Town and the next thing I'm living on the South Coast, I'm sort of got a nice earner.
Yeah, we've been very lucky, you know. I mean, a lot of contemporaries have fallen by the wayside. You know, basically, really, it was like coming back in 1992. We split up shortly after we were in Australia, 1986. So there was a few years of nothing. But now we are sort of, you know, we earn quite a lot of money playing live. More than we did the first time round.
Look, you're on the same bill as the Human League. Is there going to be any backstage tension and sharing of hair gel?
Don't you want me, baby? Don't you want me, oh?
We always like the Human League. You know, we're pretty eclectic. Look, I can't think of anyone we didn't like.
I really liked both the girls in the Human League. I like their op shop dressing, and I won't hear a word against their singing ability. It's mainly new pretentious people coming up, isn't it, with the first album that are kind of be problematic usually, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't really remember us falling out of anyone. Except, remember the Gibson brothers?
Oh, yeah, Gay Sera La Vida.
Da-da-da. I mean, I thought that was great, that song. We were in Belgium or somewhere doing this TV show, and the dressing rooms were kind of made of just partitions, you know? And we were mucking around, and we knocked one over and fell in the Gibson brothers' dressing room.
Well, you don't want to upset the Gibson brothers. You don't want to upset them.
We didn't want to mess with... No, because he... You know, I mean, it was embarrassing. We weren't bad fellas. But I just remember this guy again, you know, you were just boys. And I thought, you're the one wearing the sort of lame suit with wings sticking out. Yeah, not me. Anyway, yeah, I did like their music.
Well, look, I better let you go. You've got lots of phone calls. You've got to make up lost time because people just keep talking to you and you don't shut up. It's good. What's the go with the effeminate moniker there with Chrissy Boy?
You know, when I was a kid, people used to say, why Chrissy Boy? Well, boy, you know, they put boy on the end of names over here. So I just always sort of kept it up, I suppose. Getting a bit old for it now, aren't I?
Have a great time. I'm going to be backstage with my recorder there, and, you know, if I don't get into a fight with Phil Oakey, I'll be glad to talk to you, Chris. And remember, the name is Maynard, and I drink cider.
Okay.
Chris, welcome back in Australia, and have yourself a time. Are you bringing the family, or are you going stag?
No, I'm bringing the family, and they're some of them will stay in Sydney, the wife and two of the little kids. I'll bring my older son with me.
Now, when Madness go on a tour, do you have the what goes on the road stays on the road rule or not?
No, I mean, you know, what does go on the road? I'll see you, mate.
See you later, Chris. Thank you. I'll see you at the V Festival, man.
Okay, bye.